नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय साक्षात्पद्मचाद्भिरूपं दिया वास्तुतयोपवर्णितम् मौनेन वाक्योपशमेन पूजिता प्राजीततमेष स सत्त्वतं पति. Exalted persons like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, could not properly describe the truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. May the Lord, who is always worshipped as the protector of all devotees by great saints, who observe vows of silence, meditation, devotional service, and renunciation, be pleased upon us. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The absolute truth is sought by different persons in different ways, yet he remains inconceivable. Nonetheless, devotees like the Pandavas, the Gopis, the cowherd boys, Mother Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj, and all the other inhabitants of Vrindavan do not need to practice conventional processes of meditation to attain the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for he remains with them through thick and thin. Therefore, a saint like Narada, understanding the difference between transcendentalists and pure devotees, always prays that the Lord will be pleased with him. Translation. Exalted persons like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma could not properly describe the truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. May the Lord, who is always worshipped as the protector of all devotees by great saints who observe vows of silence, meditation, devotional service, and renunciation, be pleased with us. Om Agyan Timirandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Guru Venama. One great Vaishnav poet prays, that he aspires not for heavenly planets and the pleasures therein, nor does he aspire for mukti, mystic siddhi, any earthly rewards, but he only aspires to worship the lotus feet of Nanda Maharaj, in whose courtyard the Supreme Absolute Truth is appearing like a tiny child depending on his fatherly affection. Krishna is achintya. He is inconceivable. He is achyuta, infallible. How to approach the absolute truth? As infinitesimal jivatmas, it is never within our capacity to understand in full the glory of the absolute truth. Therefore, through the processes of transcendental meditation, through performance of austerities, fasting, observing vows of silence, my restricting the body according to very severe religious principles, by carefully studying the various philosophical documents and scriptures of the world, how is it possible from any of these processes for the infinitesimal jiva to understand the infinite absolute? Therefore, Krishna says in Gita to Arjuna that to know me is a great mystery. And through the ages, there have been millions and millions and millions of persons who in fact have carefully studied the various literate scriptures of the world, including the Vedas, and have performed very, very rigorous and disciplined spiritual practice. And yet the absolute truth still remains a mystery before them. So Krishna tells Arjuna, natvevaham, bhakto sime sakasheti rahasyam yetarutama. He says that this ancient science is a great mystery. To understand Krishna is the deepest, most profound mystery of all secrets. Rajya vidya rajya guyam pavitram itam uttamam pratyakshavagamam dharmam shushukam karatamagya. It is the most secret of all secrets. Absolutely no one has the power of entrance into understanding the mysteries of the Absolute. It is only when the Absolute, being pleased upon us, reveals himself to us causelessly that we can enter into these mysteries. And the Absolute only reveals himself according to the bhakti of the heart. Therefore, Krishna tells Arjuna, because you are my friend and my devotee, therefore you can understand the mysteries of this great science. No one else can do it. There are so many commentaries on Bhagavad Gita. I remember one lecture Srila Prabhupada was telling us that before he came to America, there were almost 100 editions of Bhagavad Gita translated into English language. And he said, scholars, professors, aspiring persons on the path of yoga and religion have studied these books very scrutinizingly, and yet not a single one of them became Krishna's devotee or understood the very obvious essence of Gita, to surrender to Krishna, to always think of him and become his devotee. Prabhupada explains it is because practically all of these commentators of Bhagavad Gita has neglected to bring out the real spirit of Gita. They all give their own interpretation, and not a single commentator was a devotee of Krishna. So many yogis, so many swamis, so many professors, scholars, politicians, but not a single person who was a devotee of Krishna had ever translated Gita in English until Prabhupada had done so. And without a devotee, one cannot possibly enter into the real spirit of the very essence of the Gita. Krishna did not say to Arjuna that you can enter into this mystery of my understanding because you have controlled your senses very nicely, or because you are a very learned scholar, or because you are very eloquent in how you speak, or because you have an infallible memory. He did not say you can enter into the mysteries of this understanding because you are renounced, because you are very great. He said you can enter into the mysteries of this understanding only because you are my devotee, because you have humbled yourself before me, and you are willing to surrender to my will. This is the only qualification. Bhagavad Gita is a scripture specifically and exclusively bringing us to that conclusion of bhakti. It is a scripture for bhaktas. It is a scripture that only bhaktas can truly understand. Some less intelligent philosophers, they say that Bhagavad Gita teaches everything. It has section of karma yoga for the karma yogis. It has section of jnana yoga for the jnana yogis. It has section of ashtanga yoga for the ashtanga yogis. Bhagavad Gita has something for everyone. This is a great illusion. Bhagavad Gita commands us, sarva dhanaman puritya jamam ekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha ishyami masha. Give up all these other varieties of religion and just become my devotee. Surrender to me. That is the conclusion of Gita. That is the essence of all knowledge. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada said, if you want to give your commentary, if you want to tell your opinion, then write your own book. But don't take Krishna's words from Bhagavad Gita and twist it and misuse them to suit your own purpose. Leave Krishna alone. Write your own book and you become famous. But Bhagavad Gita is especially and exclusively a scripture for bhaktas, for humble bhaktas. Prabhupada said, if you don't want to be a humble bhakta, don't poke your nose in other people's business. Leave Bhagavad Gita alone and write your own books. Give your own opinion, your own interpretation. Because it is only in reciprocation to the humility of a bhakta that Krishna reveals himself. And therefore, only in this way can one know Krishna in truth. Even the greatest personalities, great devatas, great yogis, the most exalted personalities in the universe, Narada Muni is explaining, even they cannot properly describe the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Truth. But the residents of Vrindavan, headed by Nanda Maharaj, because of the simplicity of their devotion to the Lord was always their protector. Not only their protector, but he became even subordinate to them simply to give them pleasure. Try to understand the position of someone like Mother Yashoda. When Krishna is naughty, she picks up a stick. Thank him. So one may think, what is this? How is this possible? He is a supreme God. She has such an intimate relationship with him that God is allowing her to hit him with stick. Do you know what an offense that would be for us to hit Krishna with a stick? But for Mother Yashoda, when she hits Krishna with a stick, he's very pleased, he's very happy. As a matter of fact, he'd rather be hit by her stick than hear her offering reverential prayers. It gives him more love, it gives him more pleasure. But understand the background of Mother Yashoda and her love for Krishna, which is that background of all the residents of Vrindavan. That she is willing to suffer, to die, to go to hell at any second for Krishna. She has no consideration of her own comfort, her own welfare, her own happiness. She has sacrificed her life utterly for Krishna and Krishna alone. She's willing, literally, not figuratively, she's literally willing to suffer in hell for the rest of eternity to give Krishna one moment of pleasure if that was what was required. She has forsaken all selfish interests, all false ego, everything, simply to be the instrument for the pleasure of Krishna. And it is because of this supreme sacrifice and renunciation that she's entitled to hit Krishna with a stick. Until we are willing to die to live, until we are willing to truly give up our own selfish interests utterly for the pleasure of Krishna, we are not given entrance into the realm of bhakti. But for one who is willing to do that, however simple, unsophisticated, or complex and sophisticated, however one may be, that is not necessarily a qualification or disqualification. But that simple mood of surrender, devotion, is the greatest power in all of the creation. Because Krishna, who is the all-attractive one, he agrees to be helplessly attracted to that humble devotion of his devotee. And thus, he is willing to become subordinate, to become the servant of that love. How does Krishna reveal himself to his pure devotee? Even the purest, most elevated devotee cannot understand Krishna in full. That is not possible. But Krishna perfectly reveals himself in such a way that we could fully love him. And we could fully serve him and surrender to him. That is perfect knowledge of Krishna. Even Narada Muni, he is such a great devotee. He is on the highest platform of devotion. And when he went to visit Krishna in Dwaraka, and he saw the 16,108 palaces of Krishna, he began to visit one after another many of the palaces. And in each palace, Krishna was doing something completely different. The mystic yogis, by yogic siddhi, they can develop the talent by which they can expand themselves in up to 8 forms at a time. But each of those 8 forms, like a mirror reflection, must be performing the exact same actions as the other forms. And that is a very great yogic accomplishment. It takes lifetimes of discipline to attain.
But Lord Sri Krishna in Dwarka, in each house he was doing something unique. In one house he was sitting on his bed speaking with his queen. In another he was playing with his children. In another he was discussing the management of Dwarka with his ministers. In another he was worshiping on the altar of the Lord. In another he was giving charity away. In another he was taking bath. In each of these 16,108 forms, Krishna was uniquely engaging in different reciprocations and different relationships with his various queens and children. And Narada Muni was struck with wonder. It was just a tiny little glimpse of the inconceivable greatness of God. How even such a great soul as Narada, he could only understand one thing at a time that Krishna was doing. He would go to each palace and he would see, Krishna's doing this here. But could he understand what Krishna was doing in all 16,108 palaces at the same time? Krishna can understand every living entity and what they are doing and what they are thinking simultaneously, not only in this world, not only in this universe, but in all of existence. In his all-pervading aspect as the Paramatma, he knows everything about everyone at all times. God is great. But even in the most elevated level of pure spiritual consciousness, of transcendental realization, we cannot understand even what Krishna is doing in his 16,108 palaces in one little city of Dwarka. Even Narada Muni could not. He had to go to each one to see, here Krishna's doing like this, and there, now he's doing like this. Because we are Jivatma. So the perfection of Narada Muni's vision, the perfection of the perfect Jiva's vision, is eternally different than the perfect vision of Krishna. Vedaham samatitani varatamanani chajuna bhavashyani chabutani mamtu vedana kashchana. The perfect vision of Krishna is that he knows everything past, present, and future. He knows all things. He knows all living beings. But Krishna says, but no one can know him in full. That is the difference. We can only know one little part, one little manifestation of Krishna as he's revealing himself to us. We can understand in principle, philosophically, how God is great. But as far as practical realization, the ultimate realization is to simply love Krishna according to how Krishna is personally revealing himself to us. The gopis of Vrindavan, their perfection is that Krishna is revealing himself to them in such a loving way that their hearts, their minds are so captivated by that beautiful form, they cannot conceive of anything beyond it. Because factually, there is nothing beyond it. It is the ultimate realization. Within the beautiful form of Krishna, within his glance, within his smile, within his name, everything in all creation is contained. There is nothing beyond Krishna. Sometimes less intelligent philosophers, they accept, yes, it's very nice to worship Krishna. But through the worship of Krishna, we can realize what is beyond him. What is his source? But one who is a devotee of Krishna understands
Sarva Karana Karanam. He is the cause of all causes. He is the source of everything. There is nothing beyond Krishna.
Brahmano hi pratishtaham. The impersonal Brahman is but a mere effulgence coming from his lotus-like body. And in Ishopanishad, the prayer is, my dear Lord, please remove this dazzling effulgence so I can see the beauty of your personal form. Huh? That personal form of Govindam, as Brahma prays, Govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami, is the original essence and source of everything. There is nothing beyond the form of God. Everything is emanating from the body of God, and everything is within him. Everything that exists is simply the radiant energy of the form of God, the personality of God. And the Jivatma is just the tiny, tiny spark of Krishna's energy. But each tiny spark, by the greatness and glory of God, has the capability, according to his nature, to have an infinite, complete and perfect relationship with Bhagavan Sri Krishna. And it is only bhaktyamam abhijanati yavan yastasmitatvata. It is only through the process of bhakti that Krishna reveals this relationship. It is only through the process of devotion, humility, devotion, surrender, that one, by the mercy of the Lord, is given that knowledge. It is called Siddhadeha. The ultimate knowledge is to realize our eternal relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world. This is not something cheap. It is not that you approach a spiritual master and he simply tells you what is your relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world. He can tell you. Sometimes they would ask Prabhupada, what is our relationship with the spiritual world? Because there are many gurus who do tell. Prabhupada said, it would be useless information even if I did tell you. Useless information. It would only be a disturbance to your mind. Until you give up all your material desires and develop prema bhakti, pure love, it will have no meaning to you. But through the process of sadhana, when we purify our heart and attain those progressive stages of love of God, then gradually Krishna reveals to us from within our heart our eternal relationship with him in the spiritual world. That, of course, is the ultimate realization, the ultimate satisfaction of the soul. And when that vision, by the grace of Krishna, comes upon us, we realize how infinitesimally small we are. Understand that this material world, this earth planet, is just a little tiny, tiny particle in this universe. And the Vaikuntha worlds, and the ultimate planet of Vaikuntha, Goloka Vrindavan, is millions and millions and millions of times bigger than this material world. And there are innumerable living entities And each one of them has his own unique, intimate, personal, loving relationship with Krishna. No one can understand everyone's relationship with Krishna. But Krishna reveals your relationship with him. That is the difference between us and God. He is Vibhu, he is all great. And we are eternally Anu, infinitesimally small. And the more advanced we become in truth in Krishna consciousness, the smaller we feel ourselves. This is a fact. The more advanced you become in Krishna consciousness, the more you consider yourself an ignorant fool. Because as you see the truth of Krishna's knowledge, you realize that I am an ignorant fool. I'm nothing compared to Krishna. I have nothing to be proud of. All I can do is just be proud of Krishna, because he is everything. But a neophyte devotee thinks he's intelligent, thinks he's smart, thinks he's philosophical, thinks he's important, thinks he can do many wonderful things. Lord Brahma was thinking that way, and he's much better than any of us. Imagine Brahma's intelligence compared to ours. Can you imagine how tiny your intelligence? You may have some degrees in college, a master's degree, a PhD, but compared to Lord Brahma, he lives for the whole span of this creation. By his intelligence, he has created all the planets and all the species of life within this world. What can you do compared to that? And yet Brahma was thinking himself intelligent. He was thinking himself quite great, because compared to every other creature in the universe, he is the greatest. Even compared to the demigods. Compared to the demigods, we are foolish, ignorant insects. Our life comes and goes in practically one breath of the demigods. And even the demigods, they all worship and adore Brahma as the greatest of the great. He is inconceivably superior in every respect to every single one of us. And yet when he came before Krishna, that beautiful little cowherd boy of Vrindavan Dham, Lord Brahma was thinking, my God, because Krishna is so great that in ignorance of Krishna, I was thinking I'm very bright. Just like a firefly at midnight. In the darkness of the night, the firefly gives off light and thinks, just see, I am lighting all directions. And the fact is, in the middle of the night, moonless night, when the firefly lights up his tail, it appears, my God, so bright, so nice. But when the morning sun rises, even if the firefly lights his tail as bright as he possibly can within his power, nobody even sees him. Compared to the sun, the firefly is so infinitesimal, so insignificant, that he has no value whatsoever. Correct? So Lord Brahma was thinking like that. Because I have forgotten Krishna, I was thinking I was very great, very intelligent, very powerful, very important. But now that Krishna has revealed just a tiny little sample of his glory, I realize I am nothing. I am ignorant, I'm a fool, I'm insignificant. That's all I could say about myself, as I'm totally insignificant. Just like the devotee who said, Prabhupada, I'm the most fallen. Prabhupada said, you are not the most anything. You are simply insignificant. That is our position. We're completely insignificant. And the more we understand Krishna, the more we realize we're insignificant. A fool is a person who has insignificant knowledge. Correct? So we are greatest. We cannot even comprehend what fools we are. The more we advance in spiritual life, the more we realize how learned we are, the more we realize what fools we are. Huh? The more we make spiritual advancement, it's not that we think ourselves more important. The more we realize we're completely unimportant. We're totally insignificant. We're important as a grain of sand on the massive beach. We're just one little tiny jiva. But when we strip ourselves of all sense of prestige, then our mind is no longer captivated by our own limited ego. Then our consciousness can completely merge into loving appreciation of the supreme glory of Krishna, and that is the ultimate happiness. Someone may think that if you feel yourself totally unimportant, totally insignificant, and a complete fool, then how can you possibly be happy in life thinking like that? It is a fact that simply in terms of the negative realization, there is no real happiness. But that negative realization is the means of attaining the simultaneous positive realization of the infinite beauty and opulence of Krishna, who is the supreme, most charming personality. And when we take pleasure in his knowledge, his beauty, his wealth, his strength, his fame, his renunciation, then our happiness, our bliss, our ecstasy, our love is infinite. So this absolute truth, although it is sought after by different persons in different ways, he always remains inconceivable. Krishna is always inconceivable to everyone, achintya shakti. But to his devotees, although inconceivable, he reveals himself in such a way that the more inconceivable we understand he is, the more we love him. And he reveals himself to us in a personal relationship which is simultaneously totally inconceivable and totally conceivable. Uh-huh. Only Krishna can do like that. To try to understand this concept by material logic is impossible. Because factually, Krishna cannot be understood by intelligence. Krishna cannot be understood by logic and reason. Krishna cannot be understood by any apparatus of our brain. Krishna
Krishna can only be understood by our heart. Therefore, knowledge, philosophical conviction, learning shastra, it is only an approach which gives us a direction toward the path of Krishna consciousness. But it ends there. Ultimately, it is the faith of our heart. The faith of our heart that is able to grasp the glory of God. It is never through our intellect or mind. Impossible. Bhakti means the heart. So therefore, through our learning of shastra, which is very important, to have that conviction to always stay on the right path and to properly discipline our life, and through all of our activities in spiritual life, the goal is simply to purify the faith in our heart so that Krishna is pleased to reveal himself there. And when Krishna reveals himself there, then there's nothing left to attain in life. Simply the aspiration for more and more and more and more service. The infinite, never-ending thirst to love Krishna and to please Krishna is the true satisfaction of the soul. So we can enter into this great mystery of understanding by Krishna's grace. By being the willing servant, ready to sacrifice anything for his sake. Is there any questions? That means you're an illusion. It's only by the mercy of Guru that you have anything. Mm-hmm. Is it your quality or the Guru Kripa? Mm-hmm. You are not superior to the Karmi. You are only more fortunate than the Karmi. You are not superior, you are only more fortunate because Guru Kripa is upon you. You have accepted Guru Kripa. That is your fortune. Huh? We should never think ourselves superior to anyone. We should simply consider ourselves more fortunate that causelessly Guru Kripa has come into my life. So what do we have to be proud of? The only thing we have to be proud of is the glory of my Guru's Kripa. Huh? We're not proud of ourselves. We're proud of him. We're proud of the persons who have given us Krishna consciousness. And we're proud of Krishna who is working through them. But for us to be superior? That's a horrible thought. Huh? As soon as you think that I am superior, it is actually an insult to God. Huh? Because you're claiming what he is giving you to be yours. Correct? Just like if someone comes to a bank and you deliver that person $10,000, are you superior to that person because you're giving the money? Is it your money? It's the bank's money, right? You're giving a person a loan for $10,000. Are you giving the loan or is the bank giving the loan? Huh? So do you think yourself superior to that person because you're giving him $10,000? I have $10,000 to give you, I'm superior to you. Does the loan agent think like that? If it was his money, he could think like that. I'm superior, I'm giving you the money. Huh? But if you're just the loan agent and everything belongs to the bank, you're just thinking yourself the humble servant of that person. You need the money? Okay, I'll arrange it. Here it is. The loan agent is thinking himself the humble servant of the person he's giving the money to, because he knows that not a single paisa is his. So you may be giving knowledge to the karmis, but whose knowledge is it? Is it your knowledge? You're just like a mailman delivering. As soon as you think it's yours, you feel superior. But as soon as you understand that it's all Krishna's, it's all my guru's kripa, they can take it away anytime, they can give it anytime. So therefore, begging business is very humbling. When you accept as a beggar, are you proud of yourself? Ah, just see, I've accepted this chapati. Ah, very great, right? Does a beggar ever think? How can he think? The fact that he's taking the chapati as a beggar, he's thinking himself, my God, I'm very low. This person is very great, he's giving me a chapati, but I'm... So when we accept the mercy of Guru, we're accepting like a beggar. We have no qualification. The more the Guru's mercy is given to you, the more you feel completely humbled by that, because you're like a beggar, an unworthy beggar with your alms, and he's giving you nothing to be proud of. Oh, I'm so great that I have accepted. No. He's so great, he's giving. Do you understand? No? Huh? That is our free will. It is not that we don't have free will. It's not simply a matter of providence and destiny that has nothing to do with our free will. It is our free will that accepts. Just like it's the free will that someone comes to your door as a beggar. Correct? And by his free will, he's getting your chapati. Correct? But is he proud of himself that just see how great I am? No. He feels himself humbled by being in that position as a beggar. Whereas someone who's not a beggar is very proud to see I have so many chapatis. So by your free will, you have humbled yourself to it. If you don't humble yourself, you don't really ever accept. It's all just a superficial show. Accepting Guru Kripa is not just either you have or you haven't. According to the quality of your humility, to that degree you're accepting. And according to the quality of your pride, to that degree you're not accepting. You're superficially, externally accepting just a tiny little fraction of what he's really giving, he's trying to give you. Huh? So yes, it is your free will. And that is your, it is your fortune that you're using your free will in the right way and receiving the greatest gift, which is causelessly far beyond you. It's 100% the guru's qualification that you can make spiritual advancement. You're just like a beggar and you're just willing to accept it. Now certainly that's a glorious thing to accept it, but it's nothing to be proud of. You should be proud in what you're receiving and from who. Not in the fact that you have so gloriously decided to receive it. If you think like that, that means you've never received it. We should be proud of Krishna and proud of our guru. We shouldn't be proud of ourselves. Yes?
Yesterday you were saying that we can remember Krishna at time of death only by two processes. One is by Sadhana-bhakti and the other is by Guru Kripa. Now, if Guru Kripa is also attained by once becoming humble and accepting it, and Sadhana-bhakti is also by becoming humble and practicing it, what's the difference between them?
Because the power of Guru Kripa and Krishna's Kripa is such that they can break their own laws. Krishna can break his own laws. Huh? Somebody who's never really humbled themselves and never really undergone the discipline of sadhana properly, by some inconceivable will of the Lord, he does have the power to perfect that person. Huh? But that's very rare. Just like Prabhupada explains, Rabindranath Tagore never went to college, but he got an honorary PhD, a doctorate degree. Now, if you think that, well, I'm not going to go to college, I'll just get a doctorate degree, just like Rabindranath Tagore did, do you think you will? He's one out of tens and millions who have such a, get such a special concession of the Lord. So Kripa Siddha is like that.
The Lord is impartial, he doesn't be partial. How does it that in certain cases he becomes partial?
Because he's not limited to your framework of what is possible and not possible for him. He's impartial, but at the same time, he's inconceivable. Huh? What? So his impartiality cannot be conceived of by our rational understanding. By principle, he's impartial. But his inconceivable will, he can go completely beyond your rational conception of what's impartial. If he can't do that, he's not God. Correct?
So between these two kripas, which really is the Guru Kripa? The one which is given out of partiality or one which comes out of the Guru Kripa? One is a rare thing, one in a million, the other is one that becomes humble.
Guru Kripa means sadhan siddha, sadhan kripa. Means by accepting the Guru's Kripa in the form of his instruction and disciplining ourselves and following his teachings. That is sadhana. And perfecting our life through this process. Ultimately, it's not by our own attainment, but we simply accept the mercy of Guru through his teachings. We follow very, very, very carefully, very strictly. That means we're accepting his mercy. And through the process of sadhana,
we attract Krishna to purify our heart. That is the standard process by which 99% of persons attain self-realization. But it may be that a person takes to the path, like Ajamil. He took to the path. He was a very devout brahmachari. He was a very devout devotee. But then, due to his sensual impulses, he completely abandoned the spiritual path totally and became sinful, wretch, for practically all the span of his life. Because of association with a prostitute, he spent his whole life trying to fulfill her sinful desires. Now, Krishna, who knows past, present, and future, knew that he would be attached to his youngest son. So Krishna, within his heart, caused him to name his son Narayan. Huh? Why? Because he knew he would call out that name at the time of death. And he didn't even have any conception of God when he was dying. He was just out of family attachment. He called out the name Narayan. Huh? Now that's called Kripa Siddhi. Due to he was sincere in the past, and Krishna remembered his sincerity in the past, but somehow or other, even though he completely left his sadhana behind, he certainly wasn't a sadhana siddhi, he was a debauchee. By Krishna's inconceivable will, he wanted to be mercy upon that Ajamil. Why exactly? We cannot say he was partial. We can only understand that his impartiality in this regard. Krishna says he's impartial, right? Krishna says we must accept. When Krishna says he's impartial, he's impartial. That's all there is to it. You cannot argue the fact when Krishna says it, correct? He's the absolute truth, and what he says is the absolute truth. So if he appears to be partial, that's just what it is it's inconceivable way of being impartial. You'll never understand it. You can just have to accept it's inconceivable. But it is impartial, because he says he's impartial. Right? So why did he do that to Ajamil? Why doesn't he do it to everybody who's attached to prostitutes? Krishna has his reasons.
So what is the role of free will in that case?
In that case? When Kripa Siddha comes upon you, you're just a very lucky man. Ajamil's free will is when he saw the Yamadutas tearing him by the throat back to hell, and then he saw the Vishnudutas protect him, and he decided, I'd rather go with them. Right? That was his free will. But Krishna's Kripa Siddha was, he was so kind that he made it so clear to Ajamil that how could he possibly decide anything else? Right? But that mercy is very rare. Don't expect it. Don't become attached to prostitutes and sex life and think, I will be like Ajamil. It's possible it can happen, but it is not likely. So it's better that you very diligently practice your sadhana and accept Guru's kripa in that way. You understand? That means you've understood. Yes. Huh? Because you are representing your guru. When the mailman delivers to you a check for 1 lakh of rupees, does the mailman think, I'm very rich, I'm giving you 1 lakh of rupees? But just because he doesn't consider himself rich, does that mean that he doesn't do his job? He's simply delivering. The knowledge is Krishna's knowledge. It's not your knowledge. You're simply delivering it. As a peon, you're simply delivering that knowledge with all force and all conviction. The conviction is not in us. The conviction is in the power of our spiritual master in Krishna. If you want to be empowered, you have to give up the conceptions of I and mine. That is the difference between a truly empowered preacher who can change people's hearts and someone who's a very good orator. Someone may be a very good orator and convince people's intelligence. But then again, politicians could do that. Professors could do that. Correct? But to actually change people's hearts, you have to be empowered. And that empowerment comes to the degree we are the instrument in the hands of the previous acharyas. It's like when a doctor has an instrument. What can the instrument do if it's not in the hands of the doctor? The instrument is nothing. Right? It's the hands that it's in that makes the instrument glorious. The instrument has no glory in and of itself. Correct? So being humble doesn't mean we become ineffective. On behalf of our guru, we can be very bold. We can defeat all opposition as his instrument. Huh? We must preach very forcefully. But we should understand who that force belongs to. And we should just be the humble instrument in our heart. Any other questions? Do you understand now? Yes? In one place, that when I sit on the Vyasa San and I'm accepting flowers, glorification, and worship from my disciples, he said, I feel like the dirtiest, most useless dog sitting on this beautiful seat of God. He's not feeling that, oh, I am the illustrious Acharya. He's feeling himself a dog. But does that mean he wasn't bold? Does that mean he wasn't convincing? Sometimes a dog barks very with great conviction. Because it's the duty to his master, right? But he still considers himself a dog. Of course, we do not consider Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati a dog. We consider him the most illustrious, empowered, divine, spiritual personality. But he's thinking himself a dog. Here I am on such a dirty dog like me on such a beautiful, nice seat. Huh? He wasn't thinking I deserve it. I'm very great. I'm very worshipable. Simply thinking that I am simply on behalf of Krishna, I'm accepting this position.
glorified, the more humble he becomes. Huh? The more he thinks, my God, this is all Krishna's. The more one glorifies a devotee should be thinking, Lord Chaitanya, he taught us not to be attached to any respect. But how is it sometimes we have to accept respect? We're actually, if we don't accept respect, we're in many ways, we're abandoning our service as preachers. Correct? Because to engage people in Krishna's service, we have to accept their respect. Sometimes we have to accept their praise. But a devotee considers, when the praise comes, that I am so sinful and so, my heart is so dirty that these praise have nothing to do with me, but because of the mission, because of the mercy of Guru that I'm representing, this praise is actually going to that. It's going to the mercy of Guru that's coming through me, as unqualified as I am. And therefore, it makes one almost embarrassed to conceive of accepting it himself. Huh? When you're accepting it on behalf of Guru, there's no embarrassment. You're simply, you just see. Huh? But we're very embarrassed to accept anything for ourselves. If we actually think we're great, then we're really in trouble. Yes, what this person is saying is very true. He is a very intelligent man. Huh? That means we're diseased. That means we are diseased. Huh? Glories to our Guru, to the sadhus, and to Krishna. That is the perfection of our life. And the test, see, anyone can say that, yes, I am giving all glories to my Guru. I am nothing. I'm the most fallen. Whatever you're saying, I'm just giving to my Guru. Anyone can say like that. But the test is when you're criticized. The test is when you're dishonored. Then do you fight back? Do you defend yourself? Or do you say, yes, you are correct, very good. Guru's Kripa is glorious. What you're saying about me, I'm a lot worse. Huh? I'm actually much worse than you think. Sometimes for preaching purposes, we have to defend our position to some extent. But in our heart, we should be thinking, actually, his blasphemous words of me is only touching the tip of the iceberg of my bad qualities. Right? If he only knew the rest, my God. Huh? Yeah. That means that's all just so many empty words. That means he's trying to get material recognition for being humble. That's what it means. It's not coming from his heart. Sometimes a show of humility is also an expression of pride. Huh? Just like one devotee, I remember this devotee, very nice devotee actually, very wonderful devotee. But even amongst very great devotees, there could be some subtle little tinges of pride. They have to be corrected by great souls. So this one devotee, he would be giving class. And they would want to give him not a big
asana, but they just want to give him a little cushion to sit on as the speaker of the class. So he'd say, no. And they'd say, yes, please. No, I'm too fallen. I can't accept this cushion. Nobody else has the cushion. But you're the speaker of the Bhagavatam. Just, no. And because people thought he was such a good devotee, they would just be sometimes for the first 10 minutes where there should have been class, there was just like a little fight going on of whether to accept the cushion or not. Sometimes two people would have to pick him up and put the cushion on him. Huh? So what is, this is not humility. So if you were really humble, you would just make the least show for yourself and just accept it. But the fact you're making such a show of not accepting it is just you're trying to broadcast the glories of your humility. If you just sit on the thing, that's the most, that's the, with the least resistance, that means you're just, that means you're really, you're not concerned with trying to be humble, you're just doing your service. Huh? So sometimes devotees, it's not sometimes, very often, humility is just a show to try to make oneself look very great and very advanced. But that's not humility. That's just a very deceiving form of pride. Yes, he should. In that way, he could preach to himself. At least he understands what are the real qualifications of a great soul. The qualifications of a great soul is humility. At the beginning, we may to some extent pretend to be humble. But through the process of purification, if we are sincere, Krishna will put us through various situations in life where we get some understanding of what it really means to be humble. And then we realize that, my God, being humble is completely something far different than I ever thought it was. I thought it meant just, you know, touching people's feet and saying, I'm your servant. But what it means to be humble is, to be humble is a very, very hard thing. It's not just a superficial show. It's something that has to come from the deepest core of your heart. And it's very difficult. Until Krishna reveals gradually your own imperfections, you have no idea what it means to be humble. But if you're sincere, Krishna starts to reveal it. To be humble means to be stripped of your false ego. And you know how painful that is? To be stripped of your false ego. It's more painful than death. It's far more painful than death to really be humble. That's why it is said, die to live. Huh? Die to live means the ego dies. It's far more painful than the death of the body. It's millions of times more painful than the death of the body. Because your bodies are dying one after another. It's no big thing to die from your body. It's painful. We read about the pain of death. It's horribly painful. But it's happening all the time. It's not very significant. But when your ego dies, then your material life is finished eternally. Huh? It's the ultimate death.
the death of the ego.
The death of the body is just a continuation of so many changes. And it has to keep taking place until the ego dies. So if death of the body is painful, can you imagine how much death of the ego must be painful?
Very painful, severe.
We don't even know the extent of our ego. We have no conception of the extent of our ego. Our consciousness of what, our sense of false pride and our sense of false ego, our ego goes so subtle. It goes so subtle and so deep into our consciousness that all of the pride and all of the disgusting matter of our false ego that we see is just the tiny little tip of the iceberg of our ego. Huh? Sometimes Krishna gives us a little glimpse under testing, trying circumstances of how much ego we really have, how far we have to go, and when we see it, we're shocked. Huh? Then we realize, my God, it appears hopeless. But our ego is like a mountain. It's like there's certain mountains in the ocean. Huh? They're like islands. And those mountains go all the way to the bottom of the ocean. And the top of the island is just the very surface of the tip of the peak of that mountain. And we're playing on that. And that's all we see, is that little peak. But miles and miles and miles down it goes, but we can't see it. Huh? That's the way our ego is. But Krishna can move mountains. Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill with the little finger of his left hand. He can lift our ego and toss it aside if we take shelter of him. So really, as you make advancement and become purified in Krishna consciousness, Krishna puts you in painful conditions sometimes where he reveals to you a little more understanding of really the extent of your ego. And then you have to understand that I am so fallen, I am so degraded, I thought I was advanced, but my God, what an illusion to think I was advanced spiritually. For the last 20 years, I thought I was a very advanced devotee. So many people are saying like this of me, but my God, look what's in my heart. It's horrible. And in that condition, you have to just cry out for Giridhari, please come and remove this mountain. I have no other hope. I have no other shelter than you. Huh? And when you come to that realization, then Krishna comes and moves the mountain. And then you become, and then you die. Then you have ultimately come to your material death. And then your eternal life. The realization of your eternal life with Krishna begins. Huh? So be prepared, my friends. Many tests, many circumstances will reveal to you as you become purified how far you are from Krishna. And in that condition, you'll do one of two things. You'll either give up and say, let me just be a karmi, it's much easier on my ego. Or you'll just have to accept that you are the most helpless, insignificant nothing, and painfully admit it to yourself, to others, and to God, and cry out for his mercy. Cry out. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much.